You're tuned into Madiba's Radio, broadcasting live from Nelson Mandela University.
I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against death domination. I have studied the idea of a democratic and free society, in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunity. It is an idea which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if need be, it is an idea for which
I am prepared to die. Nelson Mandela University. Change the world. You're tuned into Madiba's Radio, changing the world one voice at a time.
Welcome to a very special forward-looking episode of The Law Show. I'm your host, Katlego Mofokeng, also known as Girl with the Nice Pants on the Instagram streets. And this week, we're setting the stage for one of the most important commemorative and intellectual events on the Nelson Mandela University calendar. It is Africa Week. Now, Africa Week is a powerful and pan-African observance led this year by the International Office. It seeks to celebrate the unity, resilience, and future of the African continent through dialogue, scholarship, culture, and critical reflection. It all culminates in Africa Day, observed annually on May 25th, marking the founding of the Organization of African Unity in 1963, what we now know as the African Union. Africa Day stands as a symbol of continental liberation, solidarity, and the enduring quest for African self-determination. Now, it's a very busy week this week. Look, we're starting today on the 19th of May. First thing is the opening ceremony, with registration starting from 1:30 to 1:50. And then from then on, you will have your opening ceremony, which is themed Justice for People of Africans and People of African Descent through Reparations. There's a panel discussion tomorrow from 12:30 to 4 at the Business School Auditorium on 2nd Avenue. And we're looking at access, quality assurance, and the imperatives of decolonization and gender equity in higher education. Then on the 21st of May, we have the AU Agenda 2063 Pathways. This is going to be presented by the Transformation Office. It will be in the Ocean Sciences Conference Room from 1:00 till 4:30. Look out for your memos. Definitely RSVP, because I'm going to tell you about the event that happens afterwards. But I need to break it down. My week doesn't look like your week. My Africa Week is not your Africa Week. My Africa Week unfolds with three major events. With the Youth Colloquium on the 21st, the Africa Indaba on May 22nd, and Buamfundi's launch on the 23rd of May. Together, these events confront a central question. What does it mean to truly decolonize higher education in Africa, and where do we as students fit into that story? Now, all of my work and research and all of the things that I'm very well versed in all culminate in all of these three events. I will be participating in each and every one of them. You definitely want to check that out. If you want to see the girl with the nice pants and see which pants she's wearing on that specific day, pull through. Now, the colloquium, the youth colloquium that will be taking place on the 21st of May will be at WUSU, Walter Sisulu University. Unfortunately, you won't be able to see me there, but it's okay. I'll take a picture something. But the Africa Indaba will be on Thursday, and there I will be part of a plenary on higher education, which is amazing. It's something that I'm very passionate about, and it's something I'm always championing. And Buamfundi's launch on the 23rd, which is on Friday, will be comprising of a theme called 10 years since cities must fall, where are we now? We'll be dropping a trailer there and spearheading the project from then on. It's honestly an intergenerational dialogue where we are looking towards understanding how best to continue the legacy. But you know what? I can't give too much away. We're at the very beginning. Let's take it slow. Let me relax. Eating in Buliseni and give you some contextual background before I just start blasting off at you with the program. Now, you can see it's a very, very busy week. You definitely want to be at each and every one of these events. But should you not have the time, pick an event that best resonates with you and pull through. Now, in this episode, we will be previewing these events and the powerful themes behind them. From apartheid's shadow to student-led movements, from colonial curricula to the promise of an Africanized university, Africa Week challenges us not just to attend, but to engage. Very important. And later in the show, I'll be joined by a special guest to tell us more about why Africa Week matters and what students can expect. Bona. We have a jam-packed show. I hope you're ready for this. This is Madiba's Radio. We connect, inform, and absolutely engage. And I am still Katlego Mofokeng. And many of you will know me as Girl with the Nice Pants on the Instagram streets. Click a follow there. You know what I mean? See what I'm up to. I promise. It's a good time. My Africa Week program, now I said, begins with the Youth Colloquium on May 21st. Now, I will be part of a plenary session where we examine the long and often painful history of South African higher education. And to give you more of a glimpse of what that means and what we'll be talking about there, we have to understand that under apartheid, universities were segregated by law and deeply unequal in practice. In 1985, there were 19 institutions designated for white students and only 6 for black students. White students, despite being a small minority, received the lion's share of resources, whereas black institutions were created not to uplift, but to restrict and train subordinates for the apartheid state. In post-1994, the democratic government merged and expanded the university system. By 2011, 81% of students were black, a numeric victory, but one that masked deeper structural issues. As Professor Salim Badad reminds us, the challenges of South African higher education today are not just historical. They are systemic and persistent. And the Fees Must Fall movement of 2015 was born from this reality. Many of you know that this year marks 10 years since Fees Must Fall started. A lot of people know mostly about the second wave of Fees Must Fall, but that first wave, that set the tone to let the country know that we could bring you down to your knees. We can bring this country to the standstill and show you that actually the youth's voice matters. And that's important because we learn from that. When a 10.5% tuition hike was announced, students erupted in protest back then in 2015. From WITS to NMU, campuses became battlegrounds for a more just future. Students demanded free, decolonized education, equitable access, and a curriculum that spoke to African realities. They wanted more than survival. Students wanted dignity. And the Youth Colloquium will revisit this legacy, not only to honor it, but to ask what remains unsolved and what must we do next? Now, this is great. You know, I'll be walking out from there thinking, what do we do next? What is the next step? What do I do in a place like an institution of higher learning? What do I do at this place? And then I'll walk into the Africa Indaba. And this will be a space for deep philosophical and scholarly engagement. I'll be taking part in a plenary that will interrogate how colonialism continues to shape our campuses and what it means to build Africanized institutions. Hey, man, CPs, man, NCPs, isn't this important? Yes, guys, honestly, to think about it, not just the pleasure of being a part of these sessions, but being able to reflect alongside published scholars, to conversate with them, and also to implement them. Now, it's all good and fine having things written out on paper and, you know, doing the work and the research. That's amazing. The implementation is oftentimes where we miss the mark, where we actually start lagging. And it's a fatigue that is often spoken about that I will let you know about later. But it's a fatigue that it's very worrisome in the sense that once we are too tired to actually implement all of the strategies that we've put on paper, it means that we don't really see the reality of what it is that we had envisioned in the first place. So when we're walking out of the Youth Colloquium at WUSU and engaging and thinking, what do we do next? My next stop is the Africa Indaba. And now we're looking at, okay, how can we Africanize institutions? That's our next step. What do we do? How do we build Africanized institutions? Now, thinkers like Frantz Fanon, Steve Biko, Robert Sobukwe, and Namdi Azikiwe will provide the intellectual scaffolding. Fanon reminds us that decolonization begins in the mind, where Biko tells us to reject value systems that make us foreigners in our own land. And then Sobukwe urges us towards Pan-African unity, not just in geography, but in curriculum. Now today, the curricula at many African universities, including NMU, still center European theorists, philosophers, and models. Local languages remain underutilized. Indigenous knowledge systems such as Ashanti philosophy or traditional medicine are seen as supplemental rather than foundational. Yet progress is underway. Some institutions are interrogating and integrating indigenous languages, African-centered theory, and community-based learning. Students are demanding faculty diversity, culturally relevant course content, and the learning environments that reflect who they are. The Africa Indaba asks us, are we still reproducing colonial ideas, or are we ready to root our knowledge production in African soil? Now, envision my week. Today I'm talking to you, having the time of my life, engaging with you about what my week looks like, and breaking it down essentially. But from Wednesday onwards, I'll be looking at how best to continue the legacy of what was sought to be obtained during the Must Fall movement, right? Then we look at building Africanized learning spaces, spaces that reflect who we are, that reflect our backgrounds, and that tell the story of who we are and where we're going. And we want something like that. You want to be at a university where, when you're going to university, first of all, you understand the fact that you are getting an education so you can go back home and empower the people that you've left behind at home, to empower the communities in which we find ourselves on a day-to-day. So when I am learning all of these things, I need to know how best to do it in a way that is Africanized, because I'm not just going to get there and start speaking Latin because law of contract comprises of Latin. When I'm trying to help residents that are leasing their properties, the best and honestly, the best and only way to go about doing that is in a language they understand, first of all, in a way that they understand, and to approach it using methods that is best suited for them. The only way I can do that is to learn that here at this university, to combine my knowledge from my community, to combine the knowledge that I've attained here at this university, put them together and better my community, empower them ultimately. That is what Ubuntu is ultimately. It's Umuntu, Umuntu ngabantu, which is great. But technically, by the mere fact that I am empowered with information, best believe that the people around me are just as empowered. Best believe that the people around me are going to be empowered and helped by this information, but also they're about to lead better lives by virtue of just me being the educated one. I'm not the only educated one. I'm one of the many. But the beauty of attending sessions like these allows us to not just sit in echo chambers where everybody's going, what you're saying is actually correct, but where someone will criticize your thinking, will actually deepen your thinking, widen the horizons of your mind, open your mind to other different types of techniques to help people in communities, and value-based leadership. It means leading by example, being transparent, being accountable, being humble, and also understanding that the mission is bigger than you. But then we beg the question, what exactly is the mission? Relax. We're going to get to it. On the 23rd, the week culminates into the Bua Mfundi launch, a powerful student-centered platform marking a decade since the hashtag #FeesMustFall uprising. Its theme, 10 years since Fees Must Fall, where are we now? The answer is layered. On one hand, NMU made strides. Fee freezes, increased bursaries, and new forums for student voices. The language of transformation has taken root. But on the ground, challenges endure. NSFUS remains in crisis, housing is short, registration deposits are steep, curricula are still Eurocentric, and staff demographics don't yet reflect the country's reality. Now, Bomfundi doesn't pretend the work is done. Instead, it passes the baton. The movement's unfinished business now belongs to us. It asks, what does it mean to be a student activist in 2025? How do we reclaim the promise of a university that works for us, not just on us? I think the best way for me to be able to explain the ways in which your life is going to be changed, should you decide to take part in Africa Week, is this. In 2015, we understand that Fees Must Fall happened. And if you don't know the chronology, I mean, I'm going to break it down. But if you do, you'll know. It started with the Roads Must Fall. Roads Must Fall was because of the fact that there was a statue at UCT of John Cecil Rhodes. And students who were going there were saying, this right here is a symbol of colonialism. John Cecil Rhodes colonized us. And we're revering him in the form of a statue. And it's not reflecting the real, true lived experiences of the African students now that are attending this university. In as much as there has been changes from the 40% in 1985 of black students attending universities to 81% in 2011, the system itself is still reflecting a colonial past and is not embracing a democratic future and present. And so they called for the statue to be put down, and it was a protest. A lot happened, and ultimately it happened. And then they mentioned a price hike. Now, many of us know tuition is literally the first of many ways to access institutions of higher learning. Now, tuition allows you access to these spaces. And if something like tuition increases, it means you are stuck having to pay a lot more. Then you might have to get a loan or a bursary or some type of financial aid. This financial aid is not always readily available. Sometimes, even if you are financially deserving and academically deserving, it's just not enough. And many people have spoken about the fact that in order for us sometimes to get financial aid, we need to romanticize or publicize our poverty in order to be deemed as deserving of financial aid. And that is heartbreaking as a reality. So then we ask ourselves, what are we going to do then if prices hike by 10.5%? What will that mean for you? That will mean you're going to have to ask the bursary for more. And if you have no way of getting financial aid, it means then your parents will have way more to pay. Now, mind you, this is just tuition. This is not accommodation or anything else. Just tuition. Just going to school. And many of you know, it's not just about going to school. There are a lot of things that go into it. There's textbooks. There is day-to-day eating, transportation, housing that comes with just being a varsity student. There is getting dressed. There are toiletries. A lot goes into being a regular human being or a regular student. And if tuition increases by right, a lot of other things will increase too. Meeting that demand is very, very hard for previously disadvantaged South Africans. And that's the truth of the matter. That's what culminated into the Fees Must Fall movement. They said 10.5, took to the streets, decided to protest against it. And as many of you know, the consequences were very dire. Others were being shot at with rubber bullets. They were sprayed with tear gas. Other students were going through it. Others ended up in hospital. Some were suspended from school. Others were even in court, having to defend themselves. Universities were taking students to court over the Must Fall movements. There are some that are still right now tied up in court cases that are quite literally the bane of their existence. And there's money that also goes into that, mind you. Legal representation is not cheap, ladies and gentlemen. Why do you think we're doing law? Because we want the money. In any case, what happened was that obviously there was a lot happening, and so as to kind of quell the nerves of the students on the ground, the government of the day decided, no, you know what, we're gonna set a price freeze, and we're not gonna increase fees, we're gonna cap them, and then we'll just move forward in that direction. And it seemed like, okay, this is fine. But now students wanted free and decolonized education. Free education means I don't want to have to pay for tuition and housing and the like. Yes, I can handle my day-to-day or personal things like your toiletries and whatever else. But come on, those things alone are super expensive. Can you imagine having to carry tuition and everything else? It's a lot. Not many people can handle it. And we also need to be cognizant of the realities that South Africans are living in. Not all of us come from a two-parent household. Not all of us come from a two-income household, let alone one. Some of us are living on grants month to month, and you're sometimes, more often than not, you're not the only child going to school. Now, you might not be the only child going to varsity at that. So you can imagine all that money going towards furthering your education without the guarantee of a job. And I mean, what will that ultimately mean for you? But is dropping out an option in any case? Does going into the workspace without any qualification, without any experience, does that seem feasible? Oftentimes it isn't. What are you going to put there when they say we need experience for this and this and this job? And especially internships are insane in the sense that they expect like 3 years of experience. Just to be an intern, just to learn the ropes of a specific company or corporation or organization, what does that mean for you as a person? Now you have to run around doing the most for half the price. That's just not it. So now then students understand that this is the reality that we're living in. It doesn't make sense. Government of the day says, okay, we understand that this is your cry. Okay, Fede, let's cap the prices. They kept the prices. And then they decided, okay, maybe free education is just not possible. So how about we say that we open more, we widen the spectrum of financial aid. And as fast then moved from being a loan to a bursary. And more students then were able to access it, around 30,000, I think was the increase, or 300,000 roundabout there. And that's amazing. More students got to go to school. More students got to engage with important curriculum and information and open their horizons and, you know, better the communities that they come from. Great stuff. It's been 10 years. Fees have increased. That price freeze was very, very temporary. It was very temporary, but the problem still persists. NSFAS now is in a strong crisis. We saw this at the beginning of the year. And they're dropping students left, right, and center without any prior warning sometimes. Other times, they are giving them warnings. Other times, they let them know through new policies that, you know, you don't qualify for financial aid. So now we're back at square one. We're fighting for financial aid. We're fighting for inclusion. We're fighting for access. Ultimately, then we look at decolonized education. What we're trying to say there is, if I'm sitting in a class, I don't just want to hear about the fact that Jan van Riebeck decided to come here and, you know, he found it interesting enough. And so we're seeing the trajectory of his history. What about the history of my people? What about where they're from? What happened to them? What about them before colonization, during colonization, and after? What are the lived experiences of my people? Can there be contextual background given? That's what decolonized education is. Can we draw from, you know, indigenous systems, knowledge systems, and use that in classrooms? Are we able to say, you know, you have a specific way of doing certain things. We can actually incorporate that into this and that module, this and that course. people weren't seeing that happen. There was a certain rigid standard of work that was being put out at a specific time. And now scholars have opened the eyes of many, speaking about decolonized education, speaking about Pan-Africanism, Africanization, decolonization. We've looked at those things. This is all good and fine. Where's the implementation? Are we seeing that reflected in the core values here at Nelson Mandela? Are we seeing that in our day-to-day lives, in our lived realities? Are we seeing our indigenous knowledge systems being used in our modules and our courses? Are we seeing ourselves now reflected back? I'm not going to lie to you. During my first degree, very little, you know, it was here and there, but there was... there was very little that you would hear. I did philosophy, and I remember we did African philosophy, and there was quite a lot of writings, you know, by obviously Africans, and it was amazing. And we were able to kind of just look at it and say, when African philosophy first started, it was really about European settlers going to Africa, observing Africans, and from then on, going on to write about them. And then using, you know, different ideologies or philosophical theories and all that. But then times changed. Africans finally grabbed hold of the pen and decided to actually pen their own history. And they took and reclaimed what was always meant to be for us. Amazing stuff. But that was very little. And that was like only one sub-theme inside an entire module. And that was my major. So you can imagine it was a lot. When I got to Nelson Mandela University, I'm not going to lie, Dr. Mtimka's class was amazing. I remember he wanted us to engage with the material, to be able to have a conversation with him about the material without really looking at your textbook and kind of like having to like look at it and say page what, no, but to critically engage with it, to think. And I remember sitting there and reading about Cordesa 1, Cordesa 2, and the like, you know, and just listening to that, understanding all of that, looking at that history and seeing how rich it was. You would look at how there were treaties that were signed, and you would look at the creation of the African Union itself, literally why we have Africa Week. Understanding those things, this is literally the first step in decolonizing any type of institution, is understanding and also revering those that came before us to make sure that we stand here and we're able to sit here comfortably without really worrying, to come here as academics and not feel inferior. And I remember just that class opening my eyes to, honestly, the fact that there's so much more we can be educated on, and there's so much more I can know about South African history and African history. And then I came across Professor Sesandi's papers. And those radicalized me in such an amazing way. And then going to his lectures and attending the seminars, that allowed me a different view, where you start asking the question. More often than not, you don't really critically engage with certain things. But one of the main questions that were really posed to us, that have been posed over the years, are, you've never heard Robert Sobukwe's voice. How come? You've never seen quite a lot of his quotes. Why is that? Did you know that Robert Sobukwe worked at Wits? That he published a paper at Wits as part of his academics? Do you have access to that? Ask yourself that very important question. Are you able to read that? So certain things, certain bodies of information are available. We have Steve Biko's I Write What I Like. And that's so amazing in the sense that we are able to see some version of his voice. We are able to see his voice. But with Robert Sobukwe, it wasn't the same. That wasn't it. He was censored. His voice is nowhere to be found. And it begs the question, what do you mean? Who did this? Who's responsible for it? And what exactly were they trying to suppress, so much so that they decided to actually suppress this one human being, where there was even a clause named after him? things like those types of curriculum that are that you are exposed to as a student allow you to think far wider than you ever could have in your entire life. It's fun to say, you know, it's Frantz Fanon's centenary this year. Robert Sobukwe would have been however old. Steve Biko would have been however old. And to hold these lectures, but not thinking about them, not understanding just the gravity of the work these people did, first of all, but also the gravity of the work done to try and suppress their work, that says a lot. It says a lot about the system that they were living under. It says a lot about the system we are currently living under. If still to this day, we cannot have something that says, this is what Sobukwe stood for. These are his writings. This is what his voice sounded like. And this is what he used to say. That man was powerful. I want you to check out the history of I Am an African. You know the famous speech by Thabo Mbeki. Look it up. Look up the history concerning Robert Sobukwe. And you'll be very surprised to see what you find. And you'll be very surprised to understand the fact that we are living an inspired life. One that we never truly envisioned because we don't know about oppression and segregation. Not the kind that they were going under. Ours is different. The system has adapted. The system has truly adapted. And now it is our responsibility to stand up and say, okay, seeing as the system has adapted towards us and our problems, and it still maintains some sort of oppression and suppression of information and the voices of Black people, how best can we maneuver in a system like this? How do we disrupt this type of system? And that's the beauty of it. I think the university itself is taking important strides in that direction. And Marabiki biki, whereas other things are being pulled out from under us, means we're doing things in bad faith. If we're keeping it a buck 50, I'm going to keep it a stag with you. It means we're regressing. Because we had initially said free education. Free education was, okay, we can't give you free education, but what we can do is we can subsidize the education. Now, that subsidized education comes with a bunch of policies that act as barriers to entry. And that still then means we're facing the same issue. It's just wrapped in like a different color. Now what? What is the way forward from then on? And then you look at it in the sense that we are living different lives to those that were living before us. A truly decolonized system is one that critically looks at our past and our present. We must view ourselves as subjects of our own history because we are. So we're cultivating narratives now that will further be looked back on by those younger than us. The next generation is looking towards us to make some type of significant change. And activism within this space, within this year, in as much as we have made certain strides towards decolonizing education and allowing us to be able to reflect on different leaders and scholars, it's not enough. We really do need access to these institutions of higher learning. We really do need to look at alternatives within the job market, especially with the way life is just moving. We need to look at our economy, our political economy. This means conscientizing yourself. This means educating yourself and empowering yourself with as much information as you possibly can. And I know there's very little time in varsity. It gets really chaotic. That's why it's important for you to attend and engage events that are happening this week, like Africa Week. Because Africa Week is more than a cultural week. It is a mirror and a mandate. It reflects who we are as African scholars, dreamers, fighters, and it demands that we carry forward the work of decolonization with courage, strategy, and unity. Whether you are a student, staff member, or academic, this week is for you. Attend. Ask questions. Contribute.
Because in doing so, you help reimagine what Nelson Mandela University and higher education across Africa could truly become. Now, as Fanon said, each generation must discover its mission, fulfill it or betray it. The mission is before us, and Africa Week is one place we begin. This has been The Law Show. I am Katlego Mofokeng, and may this week challenge you, teach you, and inspire you to keep building. Together, we can connect and inform and engage in critical discussions. Bye, y'all.
Opening up the waves for you to be heard.